As all of this turmoil is spinning around City Hall and the county building surrounding the Chicago Police Department specifically over the last number of weeks, it's been a very difficult time, I think, for obviously the department, for a lot of cops who are on the street who are trying to do their job the right way, try to continue to do their job the right way. Mm-hmm. in the shadow of protests and people who are upset, obviously, about the shooting of Laquan McDonald, the charging of the officer, and then all the other related things. As a backdrop of that, another case that has been bouncing around in the court system for the last almost decade now is that of two police officers who went and essentially reported bad behavior in their unit to their superiors. These police officers say that they have now been they were then and continue to have lost their careers as a result of this, that they were harassed by their superiors, by some of their fellow officers. Mm-hmm. Even when it came to the level of the feds that they had gone to after they were not getting the kind of response from their bosses, which they thought would be met with praise when they said, hey, you know, these, we got a couple of, at least in one case, we have a sergeant and a police officer who are shaking down drug dealers and other people inside public housing units, and, you know, doing a bad thing here. They thought that was the right thing for these police officers to do. They were branded as rats. They ran into all kinds of trouble. And even when they got to the federal level, they had a problem, which is, I think, a case that's still working its way through the courts. Mm-hmm. And now their story is being retold because the officers that they reported, ratted on, as some called them at the time, both pleaded guilty and went to jail. You had a police sergeant, Ronald Watts, and you had a police officer, Khalat Muhammad. And now, another twist in this story, which is what happens to the convictions surrounding the arrests made by this sergeant and this police officer in a number of cases. And we have an attorney with us who's represented at least one client involved in this. Josh Teffer is with us. Mike Monaco stays with us as our legal analyst so that I don't get caught in the weeds here.
And to protect you.
Yes, exactly. And Josh, I guess we'll start with this. Now, your client in this particular case is now in jail?
Yes.
Prison?
He's been in prison for 10 years.
And convicted of what?
He's convicted of possession of a controlled substance, heroin and cocaine, a significant amount with intent to deliver. He got a 14-year sentence.
Okay.
2006.
And this case was made by Watts and Muhammad?
It was made by Watts. Muhammad wasn't involved, but three other officers who were working directly under Watts. And the crucial thing to recognize in this case is that in 2006, Baker testified to the exact...
This is your client.
Yes, to this corruption by Watts and by this crew working under him. It was outlandish at the time. It was insane. How could this ever happen? What we learned is Watts, of course, 6 years later, was indicted and pled guilty to the exact same type of behavior. But even more significantly, what we've learned very recently through the deposition testimony of the whistleblowing officers, through the FBI documents, is that law enforcement, the FBI, and the Chicago Internal Affairs Division knew all about this years and years and years before Baker's trial. In fact, the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, the FBI, the Chicago Internal Affairs Division were investigating Watts for this very same behavior, and there is a ton of documents backing it up while they were putting Baker on trial.
Okay, so I guess here's the question, and I think a lot of people are going to have this question, I know that police officers are going to have this question. How do we know that Baker wasn't actually, your client, wasn't actually a drug dealer who had in his possession, that amount of drugs? Even if there were a corrupt cop, and there are some legal things, and this is where Mike is going to help me get out of the weeds here, but if he was in possession of that with the intent to deliver, what is it that would exonerate him here?
What exonerates him is he testified extremely clearly to a scheme. These people were preying on people in the Ida B. Wells housing district, poor people, people who were involved in the drug trade. And as Daniel Echevarria stated in his deposition, they were facilitating, Watts, the police officers, facilitating this drug trade. Baker was framed because he refused to be extorted. He refused Watts' bribe attempt. And we know it's true because he testified to this at a time when nobody was publicly talking about this. It's not like he came in after the fact, after Watts pled guilty, right, and said, me too.
This is at the time.
This is 6 years before anyone knew about
it. Was he a drug dealer, though?
Well, Josh, that's the question. Is it true, Josh, that the people that the police were getting money from were the people with the money, right?
The people that the police were exploiting were the people most vulnerable in this society.
But they were people who were involved in drug dealing.
There were people who were living in public housing where there was active drug trade. Some of the people that they framed were involved in the drug trade. Some of them, like Sandra Cartwright and others that are mentioned in our pleading, were not involved in any of that.
But you
drug
still
trade.
I mean, the legal system is set up to get someone on the crime they actually commit, not the one that a police officer plants on you because they'd like you to be guilty of it. And later you have an officer who we had on this program, Sharon Spaulding, talk about how she reported this very behavior and used the exact same words unbeknownst to your client. I thought that was the part to me that was so compelling. Here she is coming forward trying to say, hey, I'm a whistleblower. Here's what these guys were doing, and it matches what your guy was saying years ago.
Right. And the tendency to try to go over all this by blaming and by saying that these are all criminals anyhow is precisely the problem. These are officers who were sworn to protect the people who were living in that area, to ensure that they were protected from criminal activity, yet they were facilitating it. Mm-hmm. And the worst part about all of this is that when this was exposed by Shannon Spaulding, Daniel Echevarria, and others, and many, many others, the police department, the superintendent, everyone did not clean up the mess, but attacked the whistleblowers.
So where are you now with the case?
Well, we filed a couple days ago, Tuesday, a motion to vacate his convictions, to exonerate him.
In state court,
in the circuit court.
And this is just a state court case, right?
This is a state court case.
This is not federal drug trade.
This is a state court state court prosecution.
He only has a state conviction.
He has, I wouldn't say only, he has a 14-year sentence.
14 years is a long time.
That's a long time.
No, but I'm saying it's not a federal conviction.
It is not a federal conviction. Right. But he is seeking through the post-conviction process, the statutes that allow that, to vacate his conviction. And we expect with this mountain of evidence corroborating. I mean, the whole case came down to the credibility of the officers, and especially Watts versus Ben Baker. We now know that Watts is a criminal, and investigative materials by law enforcement has said he's been a criminal for a very, very long time and systematically did exactly what Ben Baker testified to.
And the city knew about it ahead of time.
And the city knew about it, and we know about it now regardless. And the fact is this should not take any more time. The prosecution can and should drop the charges. There's no more investigation to do because the investigation has been done for 15 years.
So you're not representing Mr. Baker in a civil case against the city?
No. Right.
Would he be entitled to that afterwards?
You know, Ben Baker is a victim of a shakedown and of unconstitutional conduct.
He should be entitled to it.
I mean, he certainly will, I would imagine, may want to explore that. But right now, he is most concerned about getting home with his family for Christmas.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
All right. I think going back to the issue here, is how long has this been in the pipeline?
This case he testified in 2006. The scandal at this district and it's not just Watson Muhammad, but it's other officers working under them have been engaged in this type of conduct for more than a decade, at least a decade. This case that we filed recently, it's been pending in the circuit court. The information about our client filed it pro se first, and then we stepped in. But the information about Watts' guilty plea, we've just kept adding on more information.
And he's been in jail how long now?
He's been in jail since March of 2005 when he was framed.
So getting back to the point you made when we started this conversation, Ro, the problem's going to be only getting bigger because all of the people who were arrested by Watts and Muhammad, all of those folks who went to jail.
At all, actually, at right? Because there's going to be some other names here that are going to pop up.
There'll be hundreds of them.
Yeah. Well, we saw that in the John Birch case, right, with the torture crew that supposedly tortured out confessions, that a lot of those cases then just started coming up and, you know, back in the court system.
That's the problem that's made when there's a cover-up of this magnitude. Every case that Watts, Muhammad, and the individuals
even if
that
they were good arrests and convictions,
they're tainted.
Right?
They're tainted. Right. I mean, you cannot trust them, and that is the damage wrought by this cover-up and corruption.
All right, Josh, thank you very much, man. Appreciate it.
Nice meeting you, Josh.
Josh Tepfer is the attorney who is representing this, at least one person in this case at this moment. Mm-hmm. And it appears that it is just going to get bigger. And again, another problem now that exists surrounding the credibility issue of the attorneys and the police here, whether it's the prosecutors, the police. And I think you're going to start to learn, too, that even the federal government, which generally I think a lot of people believe is above reproach in these kinds of cases.
Well, if the FBI knew about this before 06, when Baker was arrested, you know, not that they're complicit, but the fact that they knew about it and didn't tell. Didn't disclose it is going to
be. Well, I want to ask you a question on the other side here. I know I got Sarah, middle initial D, Jindra, standing by with the WGN traffic trouble spots.
Danielle.
This is something that's going to stick in the craw of a lot of people listening to us right now, and including me too. Is that they do prey on people who are committing crimes. So why is it okay to let everybody? The cops should be absolutely convicted of this, and they should absolutely go to jail for what they have done. And this attorney is absolutely right that this is that it breaks down the system. But if you letting the bad guys go along in that line, I think that gets everybody upset. We'll find out what the legalities surrounding that are with Mike Monaco. But first, all right, I go back to Mike Monaco, who is in the studio with us, our legal analyst. And I go back to that question of, you know, if you do have dirty cops, and this is, you know, I mean, you know, this is as long as there have been good guys and bad guys, there are bad guys inside the good guys, right? I mean, that has happened.
That's true.
So now you have in the Chicago Police Department, this story is resurfacing now, even though it's about a decade old. That there was this particularly appears to be at least two dirty cops and maybe more within that unit that were servicing the Ida B. Wells housing project and shaking down drug dealers. And now comes a young earnest attorney who's working for an exoneration project who is trying to get his client exonerated here. He says was set up and preyed upon by these police officers. But when people stop and think, well, it's a drug dealer, what's the big whoop? I mean, they certainly want the police officer, dirty police officers, you do not want on the force, right?
No.
And you do want them punished severely for what they
do. And if they're there to protect the folks, you know, who are in these neighborhoods, these bad neighborhoods, these difficult neighborhoods,
yeah,
it is exactly the opposite of what they should be doing. Instead of trying to protect them from these dealers, They are in effect coercing the dealers to continue doing their misdeeds in order to pay the police.
There's no question. I mean, in this case, these officers, the sergeant and this officer, they've pleaded guilty and they are criminals, and it needs to be known.
Remember,
that's what happened.
30 years ago, the U.S. Attorney's Office had a case like this, and they indicted these policemen, and 10 of the policemen went to jail 30 years ago.
But what happens in a case where you have guys who are actually also committing a crime while this is going on, which is why the police, I'm going to guess, while these officers felt that they had some sort of moral umbrella under which to place themselves.
They did not think they had a moral umbrella. What they thought was these people were
they're not gonna talk.
Unable to cooperate against us because they're all dirty.
So they're easy targets.
They're all involved. Yeah, they're exactly. They're all easy targets, Anna.
But if the Mike, I guess my concern about the whole thing is kind of big picture. When you think about internal affairs that was already taking a look at these guys back then, 10 years ago, the FBI reports show that they were aware of an ongoing joint investigation back then, 10 years ago, and maybe other authorities throughout the system of city and county government knew about that. Isn't that exactly one of the problems that they need to do something about those cops, or else all of the cases they touch could be a problem?
That's exactly the problem we're in. That's exactly the problem we have. Because you cannot rely on what a policeman in this situation says. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really not too dissimilar from the Burge case. You know, because all those people who were beating false confessions out of folks.
All right. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. I'm laughing. I'm sorry, because Judy just did something to me. I'm sorry that I laughed. This is a serious topic. Inappropriate laughter.
You have perfect timing.
Brian told me to torture and confession.
Your producer told me to do it.
Excellent timing,
Ro. I'm sorry.
You are Mr. Timing.
It's like somebody telling a joke while a doctor is going out and telling a patient bad news. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
All right. They just did a very funny joke against me in the newsroom. I saw on the cameras, and that was it.
Is it X-rated?
No.
Can you repeat it?
They're taking a shot at me, and I'll tell you about it coming up.
Okay.
And just when Judy's news comes your way in 2 minutes late.